Welcome to the Lucid Body House podcast. It has been a minute since I've done this. It's Faith Simpson, your host, and I'm thrilled that I am going to be in conversation with Gregory Connors. Gregory is an Ohio-born, New York-based mechanical engineer turned actor and an alum of the graduate acting program at NYU. He has performed on stage and screen in the public theaters Shakespeare in the Park, CBS's FBI Most Wanted, NBC's The Blacklist, and a recurring role of CBS's The Good Fight. Most recently, he performed in the BAM and Broadway productions of The Sign in Sidney Brustein's Window, directed by Anne Kaufman, starring Oscar Isaac and Rachel Brosnahan. Greg, welcome.
Hello.
You're doing so well. I'm looking at these credits thinking, wow, you are doing really well. I can't wait to talk about why and how you're doing so well in your career.
Well, it's been a journey. So it may seem that way just from the few credits you're looking at, but it certainly hasn't been without its ups and downs,
I will say. I'm sure. Well, yeah. You and I have spent a lot of time together. We started in, I don't know what year it was, but we were, Joseph Saravo, the late Joseph Saravo, and I were teaching a Lucid Shakespeare and Beyond class. And that's when I first met you, I think. And we were doing Shakespeare, and you were doing the title role of the Scottish play.
Yes, with my beardless face.
With your beardless, yes. little child punim.
Yeah. No, I think I was doing Joe's Shakespeare workshop.
Oh, right.
And he had said, so I got introduced to Joe through Carl Bury, who was my acting coach. And then also Carl does work with Joe himself. He was doing work with Joe as an actor.
He was in my class for a while. He came into my class.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
And then also Larry Moss was this other awesome, wonderful master teacher who was in Carl's orbit, and Carl's a longtime student of Larry. And Larry was so big on actors getting in their bodies and out of their heads that it wasn't long before both Carl and Joe were saying, oh yes, you should definitely take Faith's class. And so it was a natural progression. But I do remember those. I remember specifically how well you and Joe worked together.
Oh yeah.
It was so much fun to see Joe. Like Joe, so you would be doing your body work and you'd be all, you know, like you do, you get in there with the actors and Joe is just sort of off to the side, sitting on a stool, looking. He just listens a lot. So he would just look down and he would say, what's that word? What is that? Yes, yes. Okay, continue. It was just so fun to... he's such a joy. And he had his, like, everybody would do that warm up in the beginning. And I think Joe had his sort of modified warm up that he did.
Yes, in the back. Yeah. The Lucid Body warm up in the back. Yeah.
The best.
Yeah. Those were the days. I miss Joe so much.
I do
but
too.
He and I were a teaching team and we knew it. We were so opposite that we just yin and yang met, and I think really provided a full spectrum for the students.
Mm.
And then you came to NYU grad acting.
I did.
We had each other. You had your Lucid Body, at least for the first 2 years. And when you got out, did you ever do that warm up?
I did. I do parts of it. So I was. There was definitely a process when we finished grad school of figuring out, oh, okay, I'm going to be leaving this place where teachers have guided us through all of these warm-ups and exercises for 3 years. And now it's time for me to figure out what I'm going to carry forward. And I would say the somewhat fortunate thing is that I was in, because I was in Shakespeare in the Park right out of grad school, I was in a company where we had a vocal coach, where we had a warm up. It was a very physical play.
What play
and
was
most
it?
Of the, it was Coriolanus.
Oh,
lots
right.
of battles and, you know, running all over the stage and climbing up ladders. And
I remember that. Also, Corey Stoll was in that?
He was, it was Jonathan Cake was the, he played Coriolanus. He's a British actor, wonderful guy. And so we had a warm-up that we did most days as a group, or a vocal coach would lead us through something, or we'd have stretches that we would do before fight choreography. So some of that, and a lot of the people who were in that production were from graduate school programs. So a lot of that was already baked in.
Yeah.
It was sort of, people expected it. So there's a, I would say it was semi-fortunate because it's only delaying the inevitable, which is once that production ended, there was a period of time where I had to go, oh, what do you do when you're not in a production?
That's what I'm interested in. How do you keep your body, mind, you know, integrated, your vocal integrated and working?
Well, I can't remember. It's hard to remember everything verbatim, but I'm sure I know there was a period of, which I think is natural as well. After that production, I think because we had been in school and been in classes for 3 years, there's a bit of, I just need to break from everything.
Yes.
So there was, I was doing, you know, film and TV auditions and would book the odd part here and there. But there was definitely a several month period of me just the whole, the, my body, my mind, everything just needed a break.
Yeah.
And then I actually, now that I am saying this, I remember I went back after about 6 months, 6 months after Shakespeare in the Park. I think I did a Larry Moss workshop, which I, you know, I hadn't seen Larry in 4 years at that point. And that was a whole different animal because now there was this added flavor of, well, I've been to grad school, so what's Larry going to think when I like, if, what if I don't do well and he says something about my
oh my god, I hope not.
Like all this pressure of, oh, what if Larry's like,
right.
Well, clearly you haven't been doing any work over the last 3 years. And I'm like, actually, I've been in a graduate school program, which what does that say if that's what you're getting? But it ended up being a really great experience, but it was, yeah, I had to get back into warming up for that and figuring all of that out. I would say it wasn't until I really got heavy into voiceover that I had to reinvest in doing a daily vocal warm-up.
Mm-hmm.
So whenever I do audiobooks, I do a full 30-minute vocal warm-up. I get in my body. I do a lot of stretching because you're going to be sitting in a chair all day and you kind of have to animate your body and get the engine going before you sit down.
Oh.
So some of that carries over.
Right.
And then I take a lot of breaks throughout the day to stretch, get back in my body. And then it's you spend sometimes 6-7 hours speaking.
God.
And it's so taxing on your voice that by the end of the day, you have to do a cool down. Or I do, that was taught to me.
Right. Cooling your voice down.
Cooling the voice down, cooling the body down. And then I don't speak for the rest of the evening most times when I'm doing that. On the flip side, actually, interestingly enough, if I'm doing like commercial voiceover for some, I don't know, if I was doing a beer campaign or some blue collar rural Guinness type thing, the best time to audition for that, to do that, is literally right when you wake up.
When you wake up, I was gonna say.
It's like your voice is the most gravelly, it's in that really deep resonant place, or right before you go to bed when your voice has just been complete, your whole body's been completely stretched out and your voice has been used up by the end of the day and it's back there again. So but it was a whole process for me of figuring out what am I going to take forward and what sticks.
Yeah, what's helpful in the real world, in the real professional world. That's, of course, what we're always trying to figure out and inside the grad acting, you know. That's what we're trying to figure out. How can we arm our students with the tools they need to then warm themselves up physically, mentally, verbally? Mm. So I'm going to jump to my next question, which is, you know how to diagnose your characters, layer them up. What's the persona? What's the shadow? What's the secret? Where am I working from? What am I hiding? Did you do that for your characters in auditions or roles on TV and stage? Is there a time where you could say, you could let us and my Lucid Body listeners, hear a story about how that was helpful?
Yeah, I would say it's most helpful, and I find it most helpful to actually sit down and do that kind of work in theater when you have a long rehearsal process, when you have time to really think about building a character. Auditions and things like that, the decisions have to be made so quickly. I think a lot of that stuff is now hardwired into me. I mean, we worked together for so long. Mm-hmm. And so that stuff, it's not just in acting. I mean, I see people completely differently than I do. So now I will notice people, whether to my family, friends, and I'll go, oh, that person leads from their head. That person leads from their waist. Just how they carry themselves and the energy center in their body that they're leading from, mm-hmm. Is so apparent to me in a way that I never thought about that before.
That's great.
So I always think about it in theater. As I said, if you have the luxury of time, it's great to be able to sort of compartmentalize and segment out, like, okay, I'm going to spend an hour or even 10 minutes sitting down to do this character's chart, or just thinking about, okay, if I want this person to be this multifaceted, complicated, nuanced human being, I can't just start from the idea that I want this person to be and then act that. It's way better to try two different extremes, like we would do in those layering exercises, mm-hmm. where let's say you're in an emotional scene. I find it way better to do that as a layering thing first, where you do the scene with the experiencing the shadow or some secret that the character has and sort of improv mm-hmm. that. And then you go into the scene and you cover that and you change the degrees of, and I'm not, it's not like I'm communicating this to the person I'm acting with, but I'm doing it in my head.
Yeah.
I'm going to cover it 10% here. I'm going to cover it 50% here. Oh, here's where it leaks out a little bit. Mm-hmm. But I think more than anything, honestly, a lot of that stuff starts to the thing I enjoy is when the warm-ups and the work become integrated into the process in a way where I don't have to sit down with pen and paper as much to do it anymore. It becomes quickly accessible so that I can use some aspect of it in an audition. One of the things I think I struggled with as a student, a sort of good student mind, is that I actually had to battle against the feeling that in the situations where I don't have time to do a warm-up or I don't have time to do a chart, that somehow I'm not prepared.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. Which I think if you, and I will say, like, these people I studied with, and Larry especially, it was so ingrained into me that I had to be, doing vocal work and Alexander and Lucid Body or some type of dance or something to get me into my body and doing Shakespeare, that you can very easily get into this teacher student, good student relationship where you're like, oh, well, I'm going to do all these things and show my homework and check those boxes. But sometimes you don't have the time to do that. Mm. And it's valuable to learn the skill of just jumping and going, even when you don't feel ready.
Yeah. No, I coached quite a few actors before an audition or before a self-tape, and without the time, it's like, we want this now, we want this tomorrow. I hear what you're saying. I love hearing what you're saying, that it's almost ingrained in your process. Your physical body is starting to do that anyway. But I know that they, in a no time situation, will choose, just like you said, one shadow, one secret, something that is their own inner conflict. So the divided self, right? The words are saying this, but inside there's a completely non-compatible thing going on. So if the text is all bravado, that imploded three is what I, the actor, am working on, and working on hiding that. And just that action in itself creates this realness and complexity. So it can work quickly, but you just have to make a choice.
Right. Which you certainly did teach us to do. I mean, I do remember having on-camera classes with you where it was all about how quickly you can drop into something, how quickly you can make a decision and do it. Right. And, you know, there's sort of, I will say one of the things that I find to be such a challenge about acting is the, what am I going to choose to spend my time on? And it's not, and I think it's helpful to hear what you just said, because sometimes it can feel overwhelming. Like, oh, I don't have time to do this, 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 and this. And yet, if you just take 2 minutes or 30 seconds to make one simple choice, it can completely change.
Yes.
Your audition.
Yes. Sometimes it's like choosing an archetype. The queen, you know, stepping into. So your physical presence shifts with a broad stroke. The king. You know, you're playing a CEO. You know, I'm going to, the king archetype. And all of a sudden, it's almost like our unconscious knows that, you know, or the victim.
Mm.
Does that ever cross your mind, archetypes? It's okay if it hasn't. But
it does. It's just, I think that's how I see, like when I watch TV, my fiance, who you also taught, is a writer. And so I now watch things the way she watches things, which is that I see shows and I see theater and I see stories as archetypes.
Yep.
So I'm always looking and going, oh, brilliant that they use that character opposite this character. Mm. And they have these two very different archetypes clashing against each other. I mean, it's very apparent when you watch stuff like Succession, and you see the characters that are the clown. You see Kieran Culkin when he's playing the victim, or even Jeremy Strong when he's playing the victim. You see the king in the father. You see those archetypes. You see the daughter when she's, you see all of them do damsel in distress to their father all the time to get attention. And so those phrases are definitely, as I said, they're ingrained in my head. I definitely, that's just how I see everything now. I think I could use, and all actors could use, brush ups on this stuff. And I think I would love to do, I mean, my dream would be that I would work on a job, let's say a film, and you would be on that job with me. And we would be literally between takes working on stuff.
Yes.
You know, I used to watch, Inside the Actor's Studio all the time. And I remember seeing one episode, I think it was Brad Pitt, and he had this acting coach who reminds me so much of Larry, named Roy London. And he's doing this movie and Roy London is on set with him the whole time. Mm-hmm. And Larry would tell me these stories about being on set with Michael Clark Duncan. And I just think, oh my gosh, that's the dream, that you have this coach, you have this other voice. So it's not just you doing it on your own all the time. You have somebody else who can go, okay, remember what we did, blah, 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 and then boom, you go right into the take.
I mean, I have coached, not on the set, but I've coached people scene by scene. I had a great Alejandro Hernandez who did The Horror of Dolores Roach. We were on live, but also Zoom when they started out of town. I would coach him every scene. It is. It's a total luxury, but to be able to analyze and see the energetic body and arc in each scene is, it's nice.
One other thing I'll say about this is that I watch, so when I watch other actors, some actors do that stuff. Yeah, I don't know if they've ever taken Lucid Body, but I watch them do that stuff and the way they rehearse. So for example, Oscar strikes me as someone who's like that, where I would watch him rehearse and he might go through a scene and be playing more of a victim archetype while he's doing a certain section of the scene. And then the next day he might come in and he might play it as the king. Now he's not telling me that, but I can see that he is making different choices to fully experience going in that direction, so that when, by the time you get to getting the play up on its feet and previews and performances, you've got this huge bag of choices to pull from. And I watched him do that. I watched him literally probably 80 performances I watched, and they were different and yet nailing the same story every time. And I think that is like the best actors are doing that.
Yes.
And it's a part of their process. And maybe look for, he had notebooks. I don't know what was in them. Maybe he was doing that work. Maybe he was writing it down and I just don't know it, but it was certainly at work.
Wow. Mark Rylance was like that when I was working at the Globe and he was performing. He was actually Cleopatra's, the all male company. And he was playing Cleopatra, and every night it was, he was so present and he was working different parts of the character that talk about layers, you know, bring that ferocious queen forward. And then another time, just the femme fatale.
Mm.
Yeah, it was amazing. But I want to now move to, let's talk about Sidney Brustein's Window. I'm so pleased you landed that job. So
tell me
about it. Tell me about it. Understudy.
So much to say in so little time. it was, oh my gosh, where do I start? Let me start with the audition process.
Yeah, how'd you get it?
Did
you diagnose it?
You'll laugh about this. I had just come back from doing a play out of town, and I was going through some pretty stressful stuff in my life at that time. And so honestly, the last thing that I wanted to do was put myself in a situation where I was going to be doing what I ultimately did, which is understudying not just the main character, but three huge parts in this play, and put myself in a situation where I would at any point in time be called upon to have to go up, but not know when that's going
that
to be.
That is just it's like amazing that understudies do that.
It's insane.
You have to know three parts and be able to step in at any moment. Talk about training.
Oh my
gosh. It's almost like getting a part is easy comparatively, right?
It is. Well, you know.
Did Isaac's part? Tell me the
story. Yeah, when I auditioned as for Oscar's part. And here's the thing. So my audition process was, I think I had looked up that Oscar had already been announced as being in the cast. And I had to audition as two of the three characters I was playing. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't, you know, write down on pen and paper a full-on chart, but I made very clear, strong choices to make them both very different
very
people.
Different.
And,
right.
And Sidney is totally, he's an intellectual, but he's totally in his body. He just like an animal in his own home, walks around peeing on everything. Oh, he just pees on everything. He's, as Larry would say, he's walking around the room, marking every corner of the room constantly. It's his domain.
Exploded two.
Yeah. Oh, gosh, yeah. So I knew I had to do that. And also because I knew Oscar was casting it, I thought, and maybe this was stupid, but I just thought, okay, I've got to summon some Oscar energy.
Yeah, that's
when
smart.
Playing
yeah.
this part, because they're going to be looking for someone who can do that.
Step into his shoes,
So I watched... I've already seen him perform in film, and I watched some stuff and just thought like, okay, I'm going to I like vocally matching people, so I try to
Oh,
just get my register to do that as close
you're
as possible to his.
wait, I just have to remember Matthew McConaughey.
That's one of them. Yeah,
That
that was,
is
oh my.
when you did that at school, I couldn't believe it. I was like, oh, this is a talent you have.
I mean, I still, there's a one man show or something in there where I
Yes, there is,
do.
but
I mean, Matthew McConaughey doing Shakespeare is my
yeah.
dream.
I think you did that in free play, but
That's
anyway,
what I
go on.
did.
Go on.
So I sort of did my whatever impression of Oscar as best I could. I mean, no one would think I was Oscar, but just try to live in that energy a little bit, and that was my prep for that character. Super cool in his body, slouching around in the chair,
Yeah.
just kind of owning the space, relaxed, having argue, you know, he's constantly arguing,
Completely
sparring
exploded
with
five.
people.
Yeah.
Oh, and so that was that. But then the other character was extremely neurotic
Which
in the
one?
writing, David, the
Yeah,
writer,
the writer.
and getting in tiffs with Sydney, and getting frustrated and all of these things. And so I had to very quickly jump into this other thing. And so I brought this jacket that made me feel very stiff and uptight, and it just helped me because I knew I didn't have much time to go from one scene into the other. I'm just going to put this jacket on, and then I'll be this other person. And I rehearsed that way. And so when I went in to do it, that's what I did. You know, I left, but I'll tell you, I mean, this is experience I often have. I'll leave an audition and go, oh, that was terrible.
Terrible, right?
There was no earthly way that I'm getting that job. I was so nervous the whole time. It's not going to happen. And then we had a call back, which was in front of, well, first I was on tape, then I did a call back in front of Annie Kaufman. And then when I got the job offer, that was when the real fear set in, because up until that point, it was all theoretical and I was just focusing on the audition. Once I got the job and I actually really took the time to sit there and grapple with how long that play is and how big those three parts are.
Oh my God.
And
Yes.
then the fact that I was like, oh, I'm understudying Oscar and he's going to be incredible. So what is that experience?
Yeah. Oh
There
God.
was a whole, it took me a week. It took me a week to recover just from the fear of what I was stepping into. And then Lizzie, who was just incredible, was like, look, you're going to do this. We were a month out at that point. And so she was amazing. She goes, I'm going to help you in this way. We're going to look at the play and we're going to write down how many pages you need to do each day to learn all three of these parts so that by the time you get to that first week of rehearsal, you're
You
completely
memorized.
off book for Sydney. And you're completely off book for maybe the second character, and you're almost completely off book for the third character. And so that's
Fantastic.
what we
What a
did.
plan.
Oh, it
Yeah.
was incredible. And
Yeah.
otherwise, I would have spiraled into the mental fear of it too much. So that's what we did. I worked on it every day, and then occasionally she would, as we got closer to, we would run through it. But
Huh?
that's how I prepared for it. And then, I mean, look, I could talk about this process and this experience forever. So, I mean, I'll just jump into the experience of when we show up for rehearsal.
Yeah,
I mean,
okay.
but by all means, jump in if you have questions up to this point.
No, I do want to know what happened when you did go on. You did go on for Oscar, right?
I did, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm eager to hear about that, but go ahead and talk about the first rehearsal. What did
So
you
the
want?
first rehearsal we were at BAM, incredible theater, incredible company. In terms of
It was the
their
Harvey?
staff.
Was it at the Harvey? The
Yes.
small theater, BAM small theater, yeah.
Wait. No. It was at the bigger,
The
it was at
Opera
their big
House?
booth. No, it wasn't at the, it's the
No,
Harvey. I don't know
it's at
why
the
it took
Harvey.
me.
Yeah.
It was at the Harvey. I mean, I guess that's small, but it's not, I think it's like an 800 or 700 seat theater.
I couldn't get a ticket, so that's
Yeah.
my bad. I'm sitting here talking to you, getting so
Well, I
regretful
know
that
they
I
have
couldn't.
three spaces. They have the Opera House. They have the one that I think you and I saw a Henry IV production in. Do you remember that?
That was at the Harvey.
Then it was at the Harvey.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know why I'm blanking on the name right now, but I bet you I can find a ticket in my apartment right now. So we show up for first day rehearsals, and here's the thing. This is what I wanted to say about this process. Annie Kaufman is brilliant for this reason, for many, but this is why I love her as a director. She brought in the understudies on day one. Now, some productions don't do that. And I've heard stories from friends who prepped me for this process who basically told me you'll probably get brought in closer to tech. So mm-hmm. they'll have this very closed room, intimate experience with the cast. And then you'll be brought in closer to tech.
You'll
have to learn everything. Right. Total outsider.
Outsider.
Annie, yeah. Annie in her brilliance or wisdom, we had gone through the pandemic and she's going, I'm not putting us in that position because that's an impossible position. So I'm going to have these understudies present from the first day of rehearsal. And we were not just present, but this also speaks to the cast. We were part of the cast. It wasn't like one of these awkward things where you're sitting in the corner of the room and no one's speaking to you and, ooh, you're an understudy and it feels awkward talking to the understudies. No, Oscar, Rachel, Miriam, Tony Award winner, Miriam, who you know and love.
Miriam Silverman, incredible. NYU teacher. Yeah,
the we best. Were so proud. Miriam, unbelievable. Everybody, Glenn Fitzgerald, Andy Grote Lucian, Raphael Nash Thompson, Julian De Niro, just an unbelievable, Rachel Brosnahan and Oscar, of course. Incredible group of people who completely welcomed us and made us feel like we were a part of the team. And then the stage management team too, they were very communicative with us. And that was huge mm-hmm. because it was sort of karma that we got into previews after however 3 weeks of rehearsal or 4 weeks of rehearsal. And one of the actors got COVID. So I went on for a week as David, the writer.
Wow.
While we were in previews, while they're still developing the show.
Oh my God.
You know, we're rehearsing during the day. And there was, a whole process of 24-hour fear. But trying to like, talk about layering, you would have loved this. I came in the next day and what's underneath? Pure fear. What I present to the director. Don't worry, Annie, I got this. It's gonna be fine. It's gonna be fine. So everyone else is like, you seem so calm. I'm like, oh yeah, everything's fine. Now we're good. And inside I'm going, this could go terrible. This could just be the worst. But what was so Glenn Fitzgerald, who was playing the character and was so brilliant as the character, was so generous and that he was helping me. He would talk to me. I would ask him questions. I'm like, oh, what did you do at this part? Or where did you go? And you know, people were still figuring out their blocking and things were changing.
How much time did you have from when they said you have to go on? How much time did you have?
That was 24 hours.
24 hours.
Now it was 24 hours. So then the production continues from there. And you know, I'm watching like a hawk every day, everything Oscar does. And he's just unbelievable. And the guy, so another fun fact, the show has like one, maybe two very short little ditties on the banjo in it. But Oscar is I bet you he could be a professional musician.
Really?
If he isn't. Yeah, he's ridiculous on the guitar. And I don't even think he played the banjo before this. Comes in day one and is... Yeah, he's working with this incredible teacher and he's awesome. He's playing this thing. You would think he was a professional banjo player. And so Annie, again, brilliant, utilizes that. And they come up with different areas of the play to feature some little riffs on the banjo. Now, I am watching this and I'm going, this is great. But also, let me tell you guys a little secret. I don't play the banjo.
I don't play banjo.
And that wasn't on the audition.
Yeah.
No one said. But then you're thinking about every Inside the Actor's Studio episode. And it's like, oh, and I got that job and I learned how to play guitar. I learned how to, and I was like, whatever. All right, fine. I'll learn. I'll figure it out. So I had to learn how to do sort of a poor man's version of Oscar's banjo playing.
Brilliant banjo playing.
over the course of that entire BAM run was just practicing all the time. Like,
wow.
Okay,
wow.
I got to get this. At first I honestly said, like, I don't know that I can do this. And
do
I'm normally someone who's pretty confident.
Do you play anything? Guitar?
I play the piano. And funny enough, the show I did before that, Heroes of the Fourth Turning, the guy does a few riffs of a Townes Van Zandt song on the guitar. And I had never played the guitar going into that production. So I'm like, oh God, I gotta learn this thing.
The strings are calling you.
Yeah. So normally that stuff I love learning a new thing for a character. It's not the same feeling when you're an understudy. You're already like, I've got too much to do. You're going to make, like, I got to learn this instrument and five songs and I got to sing and I got to do it. Like, there's a part in the show where Rachel's dancing to his playing in time. She's doing like a little Irish dance and I'm going, I got to learn how to do that and follow her. And oh my God. So we go through the whole process at BAM. And Oscar, you know, everybody gets sick in productions now. It just, maybe it was always that way, but it happens. So everybody at some point in time is getting sick. You get someone was like, they got bronchitis or a cough or a cold, whatever. And somehow, some way, despite being sick, Oscar gets through the entire BAM run without missing a single show. Mm-hmm. The guy was, it was unbelievable. And vocally, that part, the play was 2 hours. I want to say it was a 2-hour and 45-minute or a 3-hour play at BAM. And he's on, that character is in every single scene. He's on stage for 2 hours
time.
And 45 minutes.
Oh my God.
The whole time. Right. And that character, I think maybe more so than any other play, is like the master of ceremonies. Everything runs through him. He is the person in the scenes who's pouring the drinks and smoking the cigarettes and sort of moving, corralling everybody and starting the conversations and getting things going. For most of the scenes, everything runs through him. So there's just this, it's just an incredible amount of pressure built into this role. And he somehow did not miss a single show. And so I was, throughout that whole run, we had the awesome group of understudies. We would work together, or we had these little rehearsal space we would go to, and you would just listen on the mic to the show while it was going. And then when it was time for me to speak lines as Sydney, I would speak my lines, but be walking around an empty room with props and a chair
right.
and a plastic table to approximate the set. You know, we had a few understudy rehearsals at BAM, where we just roughly worked some of the scenes, like a different chunk of the play each time, but you're not doing it with all the props. You're doing it with some of them. You know, it's also a different experience because when you're rehearsing, or when we were rehearsing, it's not with the tech. So it's completely lit up. You're playing sound cues. You know, you're just there acting. Yeah. And it's completely different experience. And as you know, the experience of an actor going from the rehearsal room to the stage, you might as well have never spoken the words before or done the play.
Yeah, it's so different.
You feel, so you can imagine as an understudy, the experience of doing these, you know, 3 or 4 understudy rehearsals on a stage with the lights on in kind of like partial costume and some of the props.
Oh my God.
Might as well be 180 degrees from what you're going to experience, which is exactly what it is. So what happens is the show closes. We think it's done. Great run.
Yeah. You get picked up by Broadway.
All of a sudden it gets picked up by Broadway. And then within a 2-week period, it's like we're moving into a theater and we are in tech for a few days and cutting some time out of the play. To make it move a little bit faster, which, you know, you cut a few lines here and there. Again, it's like you're relearning the entire scene because all of a sudden one line that was transitioning you to this spot isn't anymore.
Oh,
blocking
God.
Is changing. So there was a whole process of for the understudies and the cast sort of relearning the play in this new space. Luckily, the set, incredibly, was largely the same.
Oh, good. Right.
So we move over to Broadway. And at this point, I'm like just, I would say a few weeks into that run, I'm just starting to get to a point where I feel like I'm really bad, but okay enough at the banjo to where if they put me on, I could pluck a few chords and figure it out.
Yeah.
But the one, when we transferred, the one thing I demanded from the producers was I need a couple lessons with the banjo teacher that mm-hmm. Oscar had.
Mm-hmm.
And what is her name? Hillary. I want to say her name is like Hillary Hawk. She's incredible. did a few lessons with her. We get about halfway through the run and on Broadway. And literally I had finished my second lesson with her and finally was like, okay, I've cracked these songs. I feel good. And like 2 days later, I get a call on a Sunday morning, 3 hours before the show. And it's Rachel's like, meet me at the theater.
Isaac's
sick. He can't do the show. He's down for the count, whatever it was. And which was insane that he made it. It was, I cannot tell you how incredible it was that he made it that long without the show. And I bet you he would have done the show. He probably wanted to. And the producers and Annie and everyone was like, dude, don't. Just give yourself a day just so you can make it through the rest of the run because still got quite a bit to go.
Right.
So she's like, meet me at the theater. You're going on. Now, at this point, I had never rehearsed as Sydney. Nope. There wasn't a put in. There wasn't time for any of that with the cast. So I had just a day before gone up to the costume department and said, hey, can I put on all the costume? I just want to feel and make sure I fit in this stuff. And they're like, yeah, no problem. So I try everything on. Great. Everything's good. They had just sent me a new banjo. I was practicing on a banjo that I borrowed from somebody. And they had sent me a banjo like 2 days before. But I didn't know that part of having a new instrument is you have to stretch
the
strings. So 2 days before, I Google on the internet, like, I stumble upon this video and it's someone saying I'm wondering why it keeps going out of tune. And it's because you have to stretch these strings. So I didn't know I was going on, but I'm spending like hours of a day while I'm in the back rehearsing, just pulling on these things and playing it as much as possible. And it was the luckiest thing because it finally got to a place by that Sunday where it wasn't going out of tune. I go to the theater. Rachel's like, let's run through our scene a couple times. You know, the cast rushes in as fast as they can. We have like 30 minutes before the show starts. And talk about warm up. There is no time to do a warm up. Like I'm watching other people in the cast doing a vocal warm up and I'm on stage like, okay, this glass, I'm remembering that light switch.
God, this is where the couch is. This is where the pillow throw.
Oh, this is where this is. And you're just feeling it, you know. And then the craziest part of all of it, or not the craziest part, but one of the crazy parts is when I actually went on and walked out there on the stage, that was the first time as Sydney that I was staring at any of the people who were opposite me with the lighting you were performing in.
Right.
Which is completely dark for the, I mean, I had gone on at BAM as David, but very different character, very different experience. You know, I'm starting off the play. And it was a bit like, it was funny because Oscar said to me after, he was like, is this what it was like? I go, yes, that's what it was like. It was as if that tone that you hear, that ring in your ear from the moment I went on to the moment I finished the play.
Oh, wow.
It was like being on a train. You're right.
You're just
going, going, going. And that's what that play was. You just, for that character, you go, you get on stage, you go, I'm playing songs, I'm singing, you know, the body has at that point done it so many times that I'm just on this giant leap of faith. Praying to God that this works out and
in
going,
flow.
All right.
It sounds like you were in flow, right? Just moving.
Oh, yeah. Reacting. There was the one beautiful, I would say the only amazing, beautiful thing about having to go on that last minute and in those circumstances, I didn't have time to be super self-conscious. Nervous.
Yeah, sounds
didn't have it.
Yeah.
Had no time. The only time I was nervous were the 15 minutes before I went on, but I had so many times thought I was going to have to go on that I had been getting myself into this mental headspace of like, okay, when I do have to go on, here's what I'm going to do to try to keep myself calm. And then it was, you know, there is some fun to it, which is you could actually start to feel yourself in the space and hear your voice and go like, oh, okay, I'm starting to feel that my voice is warming up to this space. I'm a little more on my body at this point in the play. Oh, back in it. And then it's just that the whole time. It's, oh, I'm out of it for a second. I'm back in it. You know, the mind leaves and then come back. Body leaves, come back. And it was incredible. And I got to the end of it. And I remember there's this scene towards the end where Sydney passes out. He's drunk and high and he passes out on the couch. And it's really the only moment of silence in the play for him.
Wow.
And I lay down on this couch and my back is to the audience. And I'm laying there. And I literally said to myself in my head, I was like, oh my God, we got one more scene. We're at the end of the play. And it was like a moment. I gave myself that moment to just go, this is, I think I said like, this is crazy in my head. And then we go into the last scene, which is this devastating, moving, beautiful scene and did that. And the show finishes. We walk off stage, and then we come back out for bows and everybody in the cast was so lovely. And Rachel literally gave me one of the most incredible moments of my life. Definitely that whole experience was the best moment of my acting career by far. And well, maybe for the rest of my life.
I think you sent me a clip of you, curtain call. That curtain
She's
call.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
She quieted down the audience and said, you know, Greg Connors made his Broadway debut. And I think to that point, it's a feeling I have when I see understudies.
Yeah.
It's you're rooting for an underdog. And I think people realized, and this is how I felt watching the other understudies who had gone on before me. Like you are rooting for that person because everything is conspiring for it really to not work out in those situations.
Yeah. Oh, and I'm so proud of you. Amazing. And how many performances did you do? Just the
I
one?
Did two. No, I did two with Sydney. I did one more after that. And the second one was actually with Bronte, who was incredible. She was Rachel's character. And so she understudied Rachel. And so she and I actually both went on the same day. That was the second one.
God.
So that was its own crazy thing because then it was the two leads of the show who are stars are out two understudies are occupying that energy in that space.
Right.
It was beautiful because, you know, what's the cast was so game. They loved it because now they're getting to, after however many performances that is towards the end of the Broadway run, they get new, completely different energy to mess with.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It wakes everybody up. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And everyone's on their toes. And, you know, it was unbelievable. And Miriam the whole time was just incredibly supportive and lovely. Oh. And that was so cool because I remember acting with her thinking, when I went out for Oscar, I was literally staring at her. And I think she may have had this moment. And maybe she didn't. I was just sitting there like this. This is incredible that I'm getting to act with her who taught me.
Yeah.
Not two years ago, 3 years ago.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
What a great, thank you for telling me all this. I'm so chagrined that I was not there, but
I
just learned a lot about the plight of the understudy and also how to manage not just, I mean, you in the text and Lizzie helping with that is interesting, but also just how you handle every day the adrenaline of knowing you could possibly go on. It just sounds like a vigorous and rigorous experience that would be good. I'm sure it's been good for you, not just because you were in a great show, but just for your energetic body to be have done that. And it must you must feel like you have stamina now.
Yeah. I mean, I not to ever tempt the fates, you know, because I do believe in, like, I try not to say absolutes as much as possible. Like, I would never, or I'm not, or I'm fine with XYZ. But I will say, after I finished that, I did say to my family and friends, like, I have the least amount of fear I've ever had as an actor now.
Right,
because
right.
I had definitely feel like having gone through that experience, I don't know what's harder. And I've had that validated by listening to other established famous actors talk about their stories as being understudies. And it's the same thing. They're like, it's, you know, I heard one actor, it was so funny. He said, the experience of being an understudy in a big show like that is you both want to go on more than anything in the world. Every ounce of you was like, I want to go on. I want to prove myself. I want to show people I can do this and prove it to myself that I can do this. And you want to be as far away from that theater as you can possibly be.
There's the divided self. That's what I'm talking about. The divided self right there is very dramatic. So look, we're gonna wrap this up. I want to know what you are doing now, so our listeners can follow you. Are you rehearsing a play now, right?
I am. I'm rehearsing a play that will go up in April at La Mama called The Poisoner. Come see the show, directed by Lee Sunday Evans, and it's really a story about the Flint, Michigan water crisis. But as you'll learn, I think, from seeing the show, this is a widespread issue all over the country and all over the world. And it's been a really great process, and Lee's a great director. So come see the show.
Nice. Greg, thank you so much for this chat. I loved it. Before we stop, I have a few announcements. We have a performance salon at the Lucid Body House Saturday. That's tomorrow, March 23rd. The theme is Take the Plunge. There's a lot of great performers. I'm actually doing a little bit myself. Just show up at the Lucid Body House at 7. There's also an advanced text class with the indubitable Katie Knipp Willis, Monday evenings in April. If you are hearing this and you want to sign up for that class, use advanced 50, all lowercase, and get $50 off. And my last announcement, if there is a first ever summer conservatory in June at the house, very exciting. So check it out at lucidbody.com. And thank you for listening, Greg. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
See you soon, I hope. I'm going to come to your play.
Wonderful. I look forward to seeing you.
I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Bye-bye, Faye.
Bye.